We are so lucky to have the UW Extension offices located in each of Wisconsin's 72 counties, and a lot of our best Garden Talk guests are Extension horticulture educators. And today, no exception, Lisa Johnson, UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County, our guest today. She specializes in horticulture education for you, the home gardener, and she works with the Master Gardener program as well. And Lisa, always a pleasure. Thanks for being with us today. Really appreciate it. And we
Thanks, Larry.
I'm so glad to have you with us. It doesn't rise to the level of last year's conditions, I guess, at least not yet. But much of Wisconsin has been under a drought, a lot of rain in parts of the state here recently. But what garden impacts are you seeing as a result?
Well, I'm seeing a lot of trees that obviously were impacted last year. And during the spring, were okay because we had so much rain. We had all that extra rain and they were coping all right. But then once it got dry, they started to show the stress, started to lose leaves, and now are completely dead.
Yeah.
So I am seeing some of that. I'm also seeing that on some shrubs. So it's the woody things that really are still suffering from last year. And this year's event has not helped either, although the recent rain last night and so on was really nice to see.
So the dry conditions at this point in the growing season maybe mean some problems for plants surviving. It just depends.
Yeah, it's going to depend on what kind of damage there was last year and so on. I can't help but wonder if we had had a really good year moisture-wise, you know, other than the spring, if things would be any better. But if there was a lot of damage done, they just can't take it.
How late in the season should we be watering the trees and the perennials and the lawns?
Well, we should keep watering up until it freezes. I'm always telling people, particularly, to watch your evergreens, your arborvitaes, junipers, hemlocks, all of those, because they don't go completely dormant over the winter. And if we have a January thaw, which sometimes comes in February or March, where the air temperatures get warm enough, the tissue will start to respire and give off water. And if it isn't really well hydrated, it can burn. And then we get that winter burn that we're also familiar with, particularly on plants on the west and south sides of buildings.
And perennials, the same? Water?
Yeah, keep watering them as well if it's been dry.
Mm-hmm. And the lawns, too?
Lawns, it kind of depends. If your lawn last year had a lot of damage on it and you had to reseed, then yes, I would say definitely that's important. At this time of year, though, when the temperatures start to go down, water isn't quite so critical on lawns unless you've just reseeded it recently or sodded.
Lisa Johnson, our Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator, with us today. You can join in. Maybe you have a gardening question at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. LaVon in St. Croix County, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We have a raspberry bed that's 12 to 15 years old. These are heritage.
Mm-hmm.
We purchased from a very reliable nursery, and they've been good producers. But the last few years, we've seen these wild kind of raspberries moving in. They're low, and they're sprawly, and
mm-hmm.
they don't produce anything sometimes. And we're wondering, do the cultivated raspberries sometimes revert to their old prehistoric raspberry plants, or are these seeds that are coming in, or are they in the soil bank, or just what should we do about it?
I would cut those out, those invading raspberries.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
While the cultivated types don't usually revert, particularly if you're in a more rural area or if you have a lot of birds migrating through, you do get some of those deposited around, or if you are near like a woodland where they are an understory, that can happen too. But the big danger is that wild raspberries often carry a mosaic virus that can infect your cultivated raspberries. So besides the fact that they don't bear as well and the berries aren't as big, you could be letting yourself in for that. So I would try and, you know, cut those back to the base, maybe even paint the base with Roundup on those invaders.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Dig them out.
Yeah, dig them out if you can get them. I know they're a little hard to dig out sometimes.
Yeah, they are. Levon, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Pam and Kellogg, thank you for calling. Hold on a second here. Let me get you on. There we go. Hi, Pam.
Good morning. I have this spring bought some of the bulbs called the elephant ears, and of course threw the package away. So I'm wondering now, do I bring them in for the winter, or do I cut them off and save them until spring, or what do I do with them?
They are not hardy here, so you do need to bring those in for the winter. I've got to say, I'm not quite sure about the exact protocol for saving those. I imagine it would be something like dahlia tubers, where you cut them, you know, after... Well, those you probably should do after the first frost once they brown, and cut them back, dig them up, bring them inside. With dahlias, you let them dry a little bit, and then you save them in peat moss. You may want to wrap them in newspaper. I know some people do overwinter them as houseplants, but that works better if you've already got them in a pot. If you've got them in the ground, it doesn't always work quite as well that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I wondered. I do have them in a pot, and I'm wondering if I could just, because I do that with my amaryllis, too.
Mm-hmm.
Some
yep.
people let them dry out. I just let mine go year-round and keep fertilizing, and so it might work just to keep them growing then, right?
It might, yeah. I would be real careful to make sure that you spray off the leaves with water, and if you notice any aphids or spider mites, you might even want to use some insecticidal soap or something. Particularly look at the undersides of the leaves so that you don't bring anybody inside that you don't want inside.
Yeah.
And I would keep them away from your other plants for a couple of weeks until you're sure that they're bug-free. I also tend to look in the pots and make sure that there aren't any slugs or sow bugs hiding in the drainage holes like they like to do. So I don't bring those guys in either.
There you go. Thank you very much, Pam, for calling. Ernie in Plover, it is your turn. Hi, Ernie.
Hi. The question I have, you talked about reseeding your lawn.
Mm-hmm.
When is a good time to reseed? Is it in a combination with aerating your lawn that you should reseed? And it should it be the last thing you do at the end of the fall season and when you're done cutting your grass?
Well, the best time to reseed, unfortunately, was about 2 weeks
ago. 2 weeks
ago,
right. First of September.
Yeah, right around Labor Day. You can still aerate, certainly. And there is a procedure that is called dormant seeding. The problem is that it's a little less... it doesn't necessarily work as well. I know it works in some situations, but if the weather doesn't cooperate, then you can end up having to reseed again, which is kind of a pain. But if you wanted to do your aerating this fall, you could still do that and then seed in the spring.
Okay. The question I have then is, you know, if you're cutting your grass and you're reseeding, isn't there a chance of that, you know, the grass seed to basically, if you're collecting your grass, that you're going to suck it back up when you're cutting your lawn? With reseeding?
Yeah, what you usually do with the lawn reseeding is if you're reseeding in early September, you wouldn't cut the lawn for several weeks.
Oh,
you would let it get longer so that the new seed would germinate and get established, and you would water the heck out of it like you usually do with new germinating seed. That's a really good point. Yeah, indeed, you would suck it up in the lawnmower, and you would damage the seedlings. So you would need to keep off of that for about 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. So actually doing it later on in the fall isn't a good idea then, either September or early spring, then, is what you're saying, huh?
Yeah. The reason why is because if we have an early frost, it might kill off the seedlings. And we've had some really weird temperature fluctuations lately, so I wouldn't trust this year that we're going to have a...
Especially in clover.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's you're a little farther up there, so you might even have to push back your date to maybe the last week in August from where you are.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Ernie. Appreciate it. Pat and Randolph, or I'm sorry, Pat and Rudolph, it's your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I have two questions, if I can get them in quick. I have a Superba rose. It's over 6 feet tall and bloomed beautifully constantly all summer. Vicious thorns. Oh, you can't get near it.
Oh, dear.
But it's pretty much defoliated now, and I do see some aphids. There's new growth at the very tips, and I'm wondering what I should do to it.
Okay.
And do I cut off what looks like dead branches now?
I usually, well, first of all, let me ask, I'm not familiar with that cultivar. Is that a climbing rose?
Not exactly. It's just real tall and lanky.
Okay.
I guess I could tie it to something.
Uh-huh.
That's about as high as it gets.
Is it like a tea rose or a shrub rose?
No, it's a red single blossom. It's not a hybrid. It should be on its own roots.
Okay, so it's like a shrub rose?
I've had it for almost 20 years.
Oh, my goodness. Good
for
you. That's amazing. Okay, well, do you usually cut it back for winter then?
Well, in the spring, I kind of have to because if it's dead, it's dead.
Yeah. Okay, usually what I tell people to do for most roses is if you're going to mound it at the base, I assume you don't use it.
I never do anything.
You never do anything to it. Okay.
I could put straw around it, or it's mulched.
Yeah, okay. That's what I was just going to say. If you mound it or put something around the base to protect the graft, but if it's on its own roots, that's not a big deal. So I guess what I would do is I wouldn't worry about doing a whole lot of pruning on it until spring. I never advocate pruning roses back too heavily in the fall because you never know how much they're going to die back over the winter or if
Should
a rabbit's going to get them.
Are they aphids now?
Yes. Yeah. It's hardly worth treating at this point in time, and especially if most of the leaves are gone. Now, did the leaves have black spot, or why did it defoliate?
Not during the summer. They've just recently sort of yellowed and all fell off.
Okay. And
except for the new growth at the tips.
Okay. So you've been watering it regularly, or?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
As much as we can.
I'm just trying to figure out why it's defoliated so early.
It kind of does this every year.
Okay, that's normal for it then. Well, in that case,
but
I wouldn't worry.
It's not pretty.
Yeah. I mean, if you wanted to, for aesthetic reasons, you could cut back the tips a little bit. But I guess I would rather just leave the leaves on as long as you can, rake up any fallen leaves in case they do have some black spots so that you don't have that inoculum over winter, and do the majority of your pruning in the spring.
And good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a gardening question, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love photos. We'd love to see those and questions as well on the Facebook page. As a matter of fact, Lisa Johnson, our guest today, Dane County Extension horticulture educator. Lisa, we had Phil post an amazing photo of a praying mantis on our Facebook page. That is absolutely an amazing close-up.
They are cool.
He says, as part of our pest control department, they caught four in about 15 minutes while mowing the grass. We could see 8 to 10 moving about at any one time.
Wow. Wonder where he's located.
I wish I knew.
I've only ever seen one at any one time.
Have that many.
Yeah, they must have just hatched out or something.
Yeah, it's really amazing. Amazing photo. So thanks for sending that in, Phil. I really appreciate it. Mary emailed us and said, I thought I was doing a good job or a good thing by taking all my houseplants and repotting them with new soil this summer. I now have what looks like fruit flies coming out of the soil and infiltrating the house.
Ah.
What do I do? Herbicidal soap does not work.
Okay. Yes. Those are called fungus gnats, and we actually have a fact sheet on those. You can look at our horticulture website, hort.uwex.edu, or you can go to Brian Huddleston's Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic to find that. Or Phil Pelletieri, I think, may have it on his website, too. But anyway, fungus gnats come from houseplant soil or other kinds of soil. And you particularly are going to see those when the soil is moist. So one way you can get rid of them is to let the plants dry out a little more between waterings. Another thing that you can do is called the potato slice method. And what you do is you get a raw potato, you make some little slices and set those on the soil and let those stay there for about 24 hours, then collect them, put them in a Ziploc bag and throw them away or take them out to your compost pile. And what those do is those will attract the larvae, which are the juvenile form of the insect, and they're attracted to that carbohydrate source, so they'll come out of the soil. And then because you've eliminated the juvenile stage, you won't have any more of the adult stage. So letting the soil dry out and trying the potato method is probably what you should do. And the reason that insecticidal soap doesn't usually work is because they're hiding in the soil and not on the leaves, except for the adults that are flying around and trying to fly up your nose. That's what they, I swear, Larry, they do this. We've had them in my office before, too, and they're just annoying as heck. But they are more of a cosmetic issue. Make sure in the future when you repot your plants that you use a bagged soilless mix. I've noticed sometimes if you use bags marked garden soil, which is really too heavy, or a potting soil brand that isn't really very good, that you can end up with those little guys.
There you go. And thanks a lot for that email. Maya in Glendale, thank you for calling. Hi.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I have a question. What's a soilless mix?
Ha.
You just mentioned that.
Yes. What a soilless mix is something that they generally use in most houseplant or container soil mixes. They used to use real soil in those mixes. And then in, I guess it was sometime in the 90s, they moved to using a soilless mix that actually has more peat moss. It has sphagnum moss. It has perlite, vermiculite, usually some other fibrous things like sedge fibers or coconut fibers, something like that. It doesn't actually have any real soil, but it's nice and fluffy, and it doesn't have a whole lot of nutrition in it. It is its only downfall, but you can get mixes that have the fertilizer already put in there. And they started doing that because they were having problems with houseplants having diseases or fungus gnats or things like that. And it also was cheaper to ship with this lighter mix.
Yeah.
And the plants would root into it better. So that's what a soilless mix is.
Thank you very much. I've often wondered, and I was too embarrassed to ask.
Oh, no.
No.
We have about 10 arrowwood viburnum plants, and everything's fine. And all of a sudden, I noticed about four of them have half of the leaf is brown, and the other is fine. So it couldn't be water. And now I'm real scared that the whole hedge is going to go. Have you any idea what that could be?
Well, I hope it's not viburnum borer. The arrowwoods are usually not as susceptible to viburnum borer as some of the other viburnums, but I would look at the base and see if you see any holes or that sawdust-like material called frass, or if you see, you know, if the bark looks like it's been kind of tunneled in. That's one possibility. The other is that it still could be possibly water stress. What we've been seeing is things that were affected last year are now showing some signs of it, and it may not affect every branch. It may just affect branches here and there.
That's what I've noticed.
Yeah.
Very quickly, one quick little more question, please.
Mm-hmm.
The time to chop off, I have beautiful peonies, and now they've got black spots.
Yeah.
Okay to chop off the leaves now?
I would chop off the most affected leaves. If there are any that are not affected, I'd leave those on because you're kind of taking away its food source for next year early if you chop it back now. But if all the leaves are very diseased or if you see shoots wilting or things like that, then yeah, go ahead and take it off.
And thank you very much for calling, Maya. And we turn to Nick in Clear Lake next. Hi, Nick.
Good morning. So I have a question about trees.
Mm-hmm.
Mulberry tree. Do you familiar with the mulberry tree?
Mulberries?
Mulberry.
How is it spelled?
I'm not sure. They produce small berries, no big seed inside. Just they can be white berries.
Yes, black. Or black. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, I am familiar with that.
I don't ever see those around Wisconsin. I bought myself 4 of them 2 years ago, and last year I had the first. They were producing first year, and this year I had even more. And it's just like kids heaven, those berries, those trees. And I'm just why do nobody's
We do actually have a lot of them, and in fact, they're considered an invasive species down here in Madison because of the seeds that the birds move around. So if we don't see a whole lot, it's probably because I don't think there is any regulation on them, but they are considered invasive.
And so
hopefully they're not being sold too much.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Should I cut mine now, then?
Oh, boy, I hate to ask you to do that. If you're not near a wild area, or a wilderness area or that kind of thing, you might be okay. that's a sticky one.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, that's something to think
about.
Yeah,
if it were buckthorn, I'd definitely tell him to cut it down.
Yeah.
But
but
with mulberries, that's a little bit of a different issue.
We have Marion and Madison waiting here, so let's go to her. Hi, Marion.
Hi. I have a question about an existing garden. I have an area that's probably diameter 10 to 12 feet and round and surrounded by rocks, and it's been there for years. But the soil has slowly been seeming to either be eroding off or getting less, because originally it was kind of mounded and now it's getting quite flat, and mm-hmm. it is close to a tree. And I've got a lot of little perennials and ground cover things in there. When is the time that I could dig those up and kind of set them aside and then put a whole bunch of new dirt or soil and compost down?
Mm-hmm. Probably the best time to do that would be in the spring. Yeah, and what I would do is I would dig in some compost and then put some bark mulch on top of that. So that will help hold your soil in place.
Right. I have one other question. Mm-hmm. I have some irises that were given to me, and I put them in a spot, and they haven't bloomed because I think it's too shady. Is it still too late to move those?
No, you can still move those yet this fall.
Sure.
Yep.
There you go. Thanks, Marianne, for calling. By the way, we have a couple of open lines. We can get you on pretty quickly with your question if you call us at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Jan in Princeton, turning to you next. Hi, Jan.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Great, appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Okay, number one, you had talked earlier about putting Roundup on cut stalks. Mm-hmm. We did that in the spring. They grow. They've grown back miraculously well. It did not work.
Okay.
Everything regrew.
What did you use it on?
Mulberry.
Okay.
Some of it. Anything that wasn't supposed to be where it was, you know, anything that invaded, like the sumac, the mulberry. Oh, the mulberry is great. I mean, I feel sorry for the guy that he bought those.
Yeah.
Because I mean, they're all over. I mean,
yeah.
The one thing I found with the mulberry is they have a sucker root.
Yes, they do.
That is just like a grapevine, except it's even stronger. And
they're hard to get rid of.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yes. They're horrible to get rid of. I have been trying and trying and trying to get rid of them, but that's one of the things I was trying to kill off unsuccessfully.
Yeah.
Did you use a Roundup solution that had at least 25% active ingredient, or was it one of those ready-to-use squirt bottle types?
We used it was full strength, ready to use squirt bottle type, though.
Okay, well, that's only about you can look at it, but it's only probably between 1% and 10% active ingredient, and that won't do it for woody species. So what you need to do is buy a concentrate that has, and you can look on the front of the bottle. It should say whether it's 18% or 20 or 25 or 50. Even I usually use between 35% and 50% active ingredient and paint that on the cut stump of the woody species, because
yeah,
the other stuff, as you found out, will not kill it.
Yeah, it was a waste of time.
I'm sorry about that. It probably would work on some of your annual weeds, but not so much on woody plants.
Thanks, Jan, for calling. Appreciate it. Gordon and Bloomer, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Quick question. You made a comment earlier about buckthorn. What's wrong with it?
It's an invasive species.
Very invasive.
Yeah, it is carried. The seeds are carried by birds, and they get into our woodlands, and it's become a terrible scourge in the woodlands. People in the arboretum here have been fighting it for years. It really takes over, and
I use it as a property divider.
Yeah.
Making sure we're not talking about the same thing here.
No, we're probably talking about the same thing. That's how it got into the state, was that it was used as a windrow or as an ornamental hedge. And it is a big problem, especially in our wooded areas. Yeah, we've got a brochure on it that is available. It was written by Dr. Laura Gell, that's at the DNR website. And also we've got one that's at our horticulture, hort.uwex.edu site, if you wanted to read about it.
All right. Thanks, Gordy, for calling. Appreciate it. Janet in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Janet.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My aunt has some oak leaf hydrangeas.
Oh.
And she said that I can have some.
Oh, that's nice.
How late is that safe for me to transplant that into my yard?
I would not do that anymore this year.
Late, okay.
Yeah, I would do that in the spring. Oak leaf hydrangea is kind of marginally hardy in the Madison area. Milwaukee, it's probably better. Is this an older shrub or a...
She's got it in a real shaded area, so she's got quite a few of them, but they've never bloomed.
Yeah.
So she said that I could have some
And so I should maybe put it in kind of a protected area? Or?
Yeah, I'd put it in a protected area where it does get partial sun. It is one of those that blooms on older wood, and so sometimes if the winter is too severe, it won't bloom for you.
Okay.
So, all right.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, mm-hmm. Thank you for calling. And Donna in Reedsburg, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call, too. I was wondering about peonies. I have some to transplant, and they're too deep in the ground, and I just wondered if we can do that now, and how deep shall we plant them?
Yes, you can. You can transplant peonies in the fall. Okay. Is this an herbaceous peony, or is it a Japanese tree peony?
It's herbaceous.
It's herbaceous. Okay.
Mm-hmm. A bush peony.
Yeah. Okay. It makes a difference as far as the depth. That's why I asked.
Okay.
What you should do is when you dig it up, you look for these little pink buds that are called eyes. Mm-hmm. And the buds are where the new stems will come from for next year. And you try and put those between an inch and 2 inches deep. And
okay.
Yeah. Preferably even, you know, between an inch and a half.
Well, that's all the deeper they should go?
Yeah, that's the top of the buds should be.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then mulch them over a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They don't. Okay, they're pretty hardy, I think. But
yes.
Just to know how deep, because right now they are a little bit too deep.
Yeah, and they don't bloom for you, I bet. That's not fun.
All right. Thanks, Donna. Thanks for calling. You know, earlier we were talking about the photo posted up on my Facebook page of a praying mantis, and we didn't know where.
Oh, he's in Illinois.
Yeah. And if okay. Phil sent some more photos, he's from Hebron, Illinois. And so here's a couple more photos of the praying mantis, and they have lots of them, apparently, right in Hebron, Illinois.
Huh.
So that
and there's
cool.
Another one from Susan, I see, down there, too.
Susan,
very cool.
Yeah, he was that's at the Richland County Fairgrounds.
Yeah.
The second
what do you
one.
Know?
There we go. So go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You'll see some really cool pictures of praying mantis. Gwen in Montello. Hi.
Hi. I have a simple question.
Mm-hmm.
I asked my husband this, and he didn't know the answer. Usually he knows everything.
Just ask him, right?
What is the difference between sphagnum moss and peat moss, and how do you use them? Is it different?
Okay, well, peat moss is just a more degraded form of sphagnum moss. Sphagnum moss is what they call the moss that grows in peat bogs. And so the top layer consists of these kind of stringy plants that are often harvested and dried and used to line hanging baskets or in craft projects or that sort of thing. And then they also use it to grind up and use in container mixes or houseplant mixes. And when you go down farther in the profile of the peat bog, the degraded material that's been underwater and has broken down is called peat moss, and because it comes from the peat bogs, mm-hmm. and that's the stuff that they dig up and package and sell to you as peat moss.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
So it's the same thing. It's just different different
stage
levels.
Of life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Composting.
Okay.
Thank you, Gwen.
I know something my husband doesn't know. Okay, thank you.
You're
Thanks
welcome.
A lot for calling. You know, I've had a couple of questions like that, which I really like. Someone called in earlier about what is soilless mix?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and these are things that sometimes those of us who are accustomed to hearing this all the time don't realize. Probably a lot of people didn't know what soilless
mm-hmm. sure.
mix was, or even the difference between sphagnum and peat.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are great questions. So if anybody else has questions along those lines, we'll give it a shot and try to answer them. Larry in Menominee, your turn. Hi, Larry.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What I usually use for woody stem plants, I use Garland 4.
Mm-hmm.
Garland 4, I mean, boy, you got to be a little careful when you paint stuff.
Right.
Because if it happened to run downhill, you'll kill everything else.
Yeah.
there's no woody stump that I'm aware of, that woody plant that I'm aware of, that it won't take care of.
Yes, it's a very good product. It is more toxic than Roundup, so I usually recommend the Roundup first because it's easy to find and because it's a little less toxic. But certainly the Garland is a good product, and I know many people who are in the restoration business who go into woodlands and hack out the buckthorn and honeysuckle, and that's the product that they use. But you do have to be very careful with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you for taking my call. Have a good day.
Thanks, Larry.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. Tim in Green Bay, hello to you.
Good morning. Say, I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about drift. I know oftentimes we'll go and pick up some chemicals to spray on our plants and our lawns, but nobody really thinks about the potential risk of drift if it would go into, you know, being airborne, going into a neighbor's lawn, maybe into a neighbor's crop, and the damage that could do to to other parts of the, you know, land that,
sure,
you know, it just doesn't affect our property.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's a really good thing to bring up, and I'm glad that you did it. We do often see herbicide damage from drift, particularly I see it early in the spring, and I often will see it in summer. A lot of these products have a volatility factor to them, and so if they are applied when the weather is too warm, they can do what is called volatilize, and that's when they turn from a dried solid product that has been sprayed on the leaves and dried, and they turn back into a gaseous form and can drift around and hit other plants. And we particularly see damage to people's vegetable gardens, on tomatoes, on squash, on landscape plants. Often I'll see it on red buds, and we will get this curling and twisting. So some of the things that can be done to alleviate that is, first of all, of course, don't spray when it's too hot, but also don't spray when it's too windy. If you have to spray and it's windier than you want, make sure that you keep your sprayer nozzle as close to the ground as possible if you're spraying for weeds. You can also adjust your nozzle so that you get bigger droplets that are less likely to drift. And it's not a bad idea either, too, if you're going to be spraying close to your neighbor's property line, that you let them know that you're going to be doing that. And maybe there's something else that you can do instead of spraying in that area if that's going to be an issue for them. But, yeah, I think we all need to be sensitive to that.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tim, for calling. Lisa Johnson, our guest, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. We were talking about chemical drift, or Lisa was, and I should mention that we'll be talking about herbicidal drift in our grape and wine industries next week on Wednesday at 11 o'clock. So if you want to learn some more about herbicidal drift, and especially as it relates to grape and wine industry, we'll be covering that Wednesday of next week. Just also to mention, next week on Garden Talk, we'll have a couple of our other great UW Extension horticulture educators, Barb Larson from Kenosha County, and she's bringing along with her Christy Marsden from Rock County. Christy's kind of newer. And
yeah, she's great.
Yeah, so we're really looking forward to hearing from her as well. So that's next week on Garden Talk. And this week on Garden Talk, it's Lisa Johnson, and Arlene is on the line from New Berlin. So let's go to her. Hi, Arlene.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of questions. First of all, I have one of those ornamental cherry trees. They got the real tiny little dark berries on it. And I have suckers coming up, so I kind of pruned them back. But I was wondering if I took a syringe with a small needle on it, filled it up with like the Bayer brush killer, and I stuck it in the sucker, what that's cut off. Would that kill the whole tree?
It is attached to the root system of the tree, treating it with any kind of herbicide is not a good idea.
Okay. The other question is, I like Autumn Joy, and I have a lot of different coneflowers.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I called in one time and asked a question. If you want your Autumn Joy not to be so leggy, is it a good idea to cut it back around May and June so it doesn't get, you know, it doesn't get real leggy on you and it more fills out more?
Yes, yes, you can definitely do that, cutting it back before the 1st of June or at least by June 15th at the very latest.
Okay, and how can I keep the coneflowers smaller? Now, I bought two new ones this year, and they come in a nice pot, and they're small. They're not leggy either,
mm-hmm.
but my older ones are kind of leggy. Now, can I cut them back, and will they do the same thing?
Unfortunately, you may have some issues with that. Are these in an area where they get more shade that they're so leggy?
They get both. They get okay. sun and shade.
So do they get at least 4 hours of sun?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, more like
six? In fact, they get their early morning sun because they're planted on the north side of the house, which is the front of the house, and it gets a nice morning sun, and then the sun goes over on the east south side, of the, and they don't get it until later in the afternoon, maybe some it
okay.
is, later in the afternoon, but there is a tree that kind of shades things, too.
Yeah, that's probably why they're so tall, is that they really should be in
yeah.
more sun. I have seen them grown nicely in partial shade, but they do tend
uh-huh.
to get very tall like that, and sometimes they will the stems will fall over. So
okay, yeah. All right, well, thank you very much for your information.
Yeah, mm-hmm. thanks, Arlene. We had an email from Karen in Pine River, who just tuned in at the end of our mulberry discussion. She didn't know what kind of mulberry the gentleman purchased. There are two kinds. The red mulberry is native.
Right.
White is not.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. I was thinking more of the non-native when I said invasive, because
yeah.
technically, even though the red one can be weedy, it would not be considered invasive.
Yeah, so she has. She can't tell which kinds she has on her woodland property. Shouldn't be that hard to tell, should
yeah, I thought that the red mulberry had a redder fruit and the white
Much
one
more.
Has more of a whitish fruit. But they have good pictures in Durr's woody plant manual. I suspect if you go online that you can, there is a difference in the leaves. The white one has more lobing on it. And the native one doesn't. So
the berries are pretty different, too.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
So. Ashley in Madison, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. I was wondering, I've got a spot out in my backyard where I think a flowering shrub or bush of some kind would look fantastic, but it is in kind of partial, maybe even bordering on full shade. And I'm having issues finding a plant that would fit in that environment. I was hoping you guys had some suggestions.
Shrub for full shade. Well, if can you grow hostas there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's actually
I'm just what
already.
Other things grow in that area so I can better assess what kind of shade you have.
Let's see. So I've got some grass, like just normal lawn grass grows fine back there as
oh,
well as
okay.
some ferns.
Okay. Well, if you're able to grow grass back there, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So I would say you could try a fothergilla. There is a really beautiful new variety that's called Blue Shadow. And it's Fothergilla. It's named
Ooh.
After Dr. John Fothergill, who I think was a British botanist, but I'm I'd have to look that up to be sure. But anyway, Fothergilla is a really nice shrub. It comes in two species. One of them is a much shorter one, and the Blue Shadow is one of the taller growing ones that can get up to 3 or 4 feet, this particular variety. But there's also Mount Airy and Beaver Creek and some other really nice ones that you can find out there. So that's one shrub that does pretty well in more shade. There are some of the viburnums or dogwoods that will do okay. We have a native dogwood, gray dogwood. It does sucker. So if this is not a big area, you may not want that. Another one that does okay in partial shade is another native, our native American filbert, or you may have heard it called hazelnut. Also suckers as well, but does have nice fall color and does pretty well in partial shade.
All right. Well, that sounds great. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thank you so much for calling. And Denise in Lamira, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi there. I have a Harry's Loader's walking stick, it's called.
Yeah, that's actually a hazelnut, too.
Oh, it
is. It's a type of hazelnut, yep.
Okay. It's about 6x5. It's pretty big.
Ooh.
How can I transplant it? Because I have to move it.
Oh, dear.
Should I wait till the leaves are gone?
Do you have to do it this fall? Can you wait until spring?
I could wait until spring, yeah.
Yeah, it would be better moved in the spring. I have moved hazelnuts before. You want to do it before the weather gets too warm, and you want to give it as big of a root ball as you can and keep it watered.
Okay, a large root ball. I'm writing this down.
Large root ball, yeah. Just, try and keep as much soil around it as you can.
Okay, and do I go like a tree, like the drip line? So if it's about 5-6 feet wide,
at least 3 feet. Think how much work this is going to be for you. You may want to prune it back a little bit first just to make it easier to handle, but not too much.
Okay.
Because you want to leave as much material on it. Yeah, and I would do it in spring.
And do you think it will transplant well? Or should I,
It may look a little...
fertilized.
Yeah, don't fertilize it. It moves pretty well, but it may look a little tough for a while.
Alrighty. And how big can I expect it to get?
They can get pretty big. They can get to be 8-10 feet. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right.
Good luck with that.
We were gonna move it this fall, so I guess we won't. Thank you.
Yeah, I'd wait until spring.
And Janet in Marshfield, what's on your mind?
Hi, I have a couple questions. One, I have a very beautiful strawberry plant hanging outside, and I wondered if I can move it in and keep it for the winter, or is it going to die anyway?
It doesn't work real well as a house plant.
I tried that once.
Yeah, didn't work well. You might be able to let it go dormant and save it in the pot and, put it in your garage, but usually things with a smaller root mass like that don't always do too well.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. If you wanted to try and keep it, I'd wait until it, dies back and then maybe store it with some hay around it or try putting it in a styrofoam cooler in your garage. The main thing is you don't want to get too dry, and you don't want it to get too cold. You don't want to have a freeze-thaw cycle. You want it to, freeze back and then stay that way until it's spring. Okay. So I would check it in March.
Okay.
All right. And then I had another question about bulbs.
Okay.
Do you plant them on top of the perennials, or do you plant them underneath the perennials, or do you just hope for the best and plant them?
I take it you have a perennial garden and you want to put some bulbs in. Is that right?
That's what it sounds like.
I have a perennial garden, and when I weeded it back in May, I found out the lady that gave me a bunch of the plants for the perennial garden also gave me a bunch of bulbs, so I don't know what the bulbs are for, you know, if the tulips or daffodils are exactly what they are, but I plant them because I know they're spring flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
And this is the time of year to plant spring flowering bulbs. So,
sure.
Normally, you don't want to plant them either on top of or right below the perennials, but next to or behind or in front of the perennials.
So there you go. Thank you very much for calling. Pedro in Fond du Lac wondered if organic herbicides are really better for the environment than traditional ones.
Well, it's going to depend. A lot of the organic products are, because they're not as toxic, are not as effective. So you need to apply them at the right time. You need to make sure that you're using the correct concentration. And generally, you need a little bit more persistence. We do have some things like vinegar, which can be, if you find a labeled product, and they're may or may not be, depending on where you are, a labeled vinegar product. You don't want to use vinegar out of your cupboard because it is, it's only about 5% acetic acid, and you really need 30% or 20% to be effective. However, that percent of acetic acid can burn you. So you need to be careful.
Need to be very, very careful. Lisa Johnson, our guest today. Lisa is the Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. She specializes in horticulture education, for home gardeners, for you and for me. And she works with the Master Gardener Program. Our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Gardening can be so much fun. It's a great pleasure. And depending on where we are in the season, there are obviously different kinds of things to take care of. During the fall, lots of gardening tasks to get around to that will help your plants get through that long Wisconsin winter. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. And it's great to have Lisa Johnson with us as well. She's the Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, specializes in hort education for the home gardener, and works with the Master Gardener Program. And Lisa, always a pleasure.
Thanks, Larry.
Great to have you with us. We had talked before our news break here about a question that Pedro in Fond du Lac asked, wondering if organic herbicides are really better for the environment than the traditional herbicides, and you answered some of it, but wanted to add to that.
Yeah, I did. I got as far as talking about vinegar, but there are other products out there too. One of the more popular ones is corn gluten meal. Mm. And the research on that was done in Iowa, where they have different soil than we do here. And it is easier on the environment, but that product has some nitrogen in it. So you have to be careful if you're using it as a broadleaf weed killer in your lawn that you don't accidentally put on more fertilizer as well. I don't remember whether it's 10 or 20% nitrogen that it carries. But in any case, it only is going to work on seeds that have not germinated yet. And your first application will kill 50% of those seeds that would have germinated, or not kill them, but prevent them from germinating. So you get about 50% weed control at best. And you need to use it regularly. And if you do use it regularly every year, then it can be very effective. So it's kind of a balancing act between finding an effective product and using it properly. So there are a number of, I would encourage people to check it out, but just to realize that while it is gentler on the environment, many of these products, that they also have pitfalls just the same as traditional products do.
Absolutely. And you wind up having to use a lot more of it.
Well, yeah. You need to be more vigorous in your use of it.
Dan in Milwaukee has a question. Hi, Dan. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for the call. I just was trying to, I was going to core out, ornamental grasses like Carl Forrester or switchgrass, stuff like that. I was just trying to see the best time of year if I could still do that this fall, or should I wait till spring?
You could probably, you're wanting to divide them? Is that?
Well, I mean, the centers are starting to die.
Okay, so, yeah. Yeah, that's always a good sign that, yeah, it's time to divide. You could, if you did it quickly, like within the next couple of weeks, you could still do that yet this year since you're in Milwaukee. If you were up farther in the state, I'd say probably wait until spring. But yeah, ornamental grasses can be divided in the fall. Typically, it's done in the spring, but you can do it this time of year.
There you go.
Okay. Another question with the grasses. I'm going to be moving, and if I wanted to take the grasses, you know, with me, and I was going to put them in like 3 gallon pots.
Okay.
What's the best way to store that? Should I put soil around it and kind of bury them, or mulch it? Or I mean, I have a area where I could just, you know, put them all together and bury them and keep them from getting, you know, burnt by the winter and all that.
Yeah. So you're moving this fall.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So
dig those grasses up and try to keep them alive for the, you know, to plant them in the spring.
Yeah. Then what I would do is just what you were describing: dig them up, put them in a pot, and then sink the pot in the soil wherever your destination is.
Okay. So I mean, I can actually just bury the whole pot and then dig them up in the spring.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Well, appreciate the call.
Yeah. All thanks right. a lot for calling, Joya in Fitchburg.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Two questions. Somebody gave me some sunflower seeds and some California poppy seeds.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering when should I put them in the ground, now or in the spring?
In the spring. The sunflower seeds usually around the 15th or 20th of May, whenever the soil has warmed up and it's past our, usually the 15th in the Madison area is about the last frost day. So I would wait until the 20th if it's been a cool spring, but if it's been a warm spring, you can probably do it around the 15th. And California poppy seeds, most poppies like to be planted while the soil is still fairly cool. So you can probably do that around the 1st of May or even earlier.
I thought the poppy seeds needed some stratification.
It depends on the type of poppy, but generally California poppies, Oriental poppies, and even the Papaver Roeus, the red, you know, the
right.
Flanders poppy. My understanding is that they can be planted right away from seed in the early spring. Now, some of those other ones, the Oriental poppies and the Papaver Roeus, need to be planted usually around St. Patrick's Day. The California ones can be a little bit later.
Okay. Another quick question. I missed your advice about the roses because I was driving. And,
yeah, roses should be, we were talking about when to prune them. They should be pruned in the spring.
Yeah, even the ground cover roses. Those dwarf roses?
Yeah, because you don't know how much of it is going to die back over the winter. So I usually tell people to wait until spring and see what
see
is coming
there.
Back before you start whacking away.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Joya. Dan in Spring Valley. Hello.
Hello. Hey, I'm trying to save an ivy plant that's in the house.
Okay.
That's dying off. It was beautiful a month ago. Now it's dying off.
Okay. What is it getting yellow leaves? Is it how does it look when it's dying?
It's just drying up.
Okay. Is it in really wet soil?
I'd have to check, but.
The reason that I ask is because ivies can in pots can be susceptible to root rot. So if it has been overwatered, if it's in wet soil, that could be why it's drying up. On the other hand, if it's really root-bound and it hasn't been watered enough, then you might see yellow leaves on it. You could see that, though, too, if it's got root rot. I would check the root system, and if the roots are white, then you've got a good shot at saving it. If the roots are brown, not so much.
Not so good.
Not so good.
White roots. Also. Also, on my string bean plants, there's some kind of a beetle that's damaging the leaves.
Okay. Could be, boy, they're leaf hoppers, they're flea beetles. What you might want to do is take in a sample of the bean leaf to your local extension office or send them a digital picture, and from the damage, they may be able to figure out which kind of beetle All is right. causing the damage. Mm-hmm.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. We had a Facebook question from Jody who says we have a terrible tansy infestation.
Yeah, tansies are an invasive plant. It says
they keep cutting it down in spring to avoid flowering. Any other tips?
Will it ever be gone? Yeah, it can be very difficult to get rid of and requires some persistence. It may take you a couple, 3 seasons of spraying and cutting, but eventually, yeah, you can get rid of it.
Marion Eau Claire, hi.
Hi. I have a question about keeping geraniums over the winter.
Sure.
We have some lovely ones in pots, and year after year we try to keep them and take them down to our basement, and they never survive.
Okay. There are a couple different ways to overwinter the hothouse geraniums or greenhouse geraniums, which are actually pelargoniums. They aren't even actually true geraniums, but they are related. They're in that same family. And they can be overwintered as houseplants if you have a really strong, like, south window or west window. You know, you can keep them going as houseplants. If you don't have good light and you want to let them kind of go dormant, you can do it by keeping them in the pots, kind of, you know, withholding water and letting them die back gradually, cut them back, and then just water them lightly once a month or so until spring. That's another way to do it. And yet another way to do it is some people will take them out of the pot, rinse the water off the roots, and cut back the stems, taking off any flowers and leaves. And then just if you have like a root cellar where it doesn't get too dry, but it stays cool, like 40 to 50 degrees, sometimes you can overwinter them that way. That was the older way that people used to do it when we had root cellars and so on. Most of us have heated basements now, so it's a little harder to, or less successful to do it that way. I usually tell people that if they have enough light and you spray them off real good with insecticidal soap before you take them in, you know, pick off the flowers and let the cut back the leaves a little bit and, you know, just clean them up, and you can usually overwinter them pretty well as a house plant if you have enough light.
Well, okay.
I'm afraid the cats are going to eat them.
Yes, I understand that problem. I have cats myself, and all of my plants are hanging plants, if I have any. If you have a hanging basket, you can put them in, or I know that no place is off limits to a cat.
No. You're right about
that's
that.
That's going to be a little harder.
I have an incredible acrobatic cat.
Yeah.
Well, what you may want to do then is the basement method, where you cut them back and let them gradually go dormant and then water them, you know, maybe keep them in a plastic bag with the top tied and, you know, water them maybe once a month lightly.
Yeah.
Oh, put them in a plastic bag with the top tied.
Yeah, so that they can't get in there.
Question that occurred to me while I was sitting here listening. I ordered some seeds late in the spring, and I was looking at these native prairie grasses.
Mm-hmm.
In a moment of weakness, I ordered enough Mazik native prairie grasses to cover 1,000 square feet.
Okay.
Which, well, I'm not going to plant it all in our yard.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but I never planted it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
In the spring, which...
You can do it in the fall. Prairies can be seeded in the fall. That's absolutely fine.
Okay.
Yep, you'd need to...
fall to seed them.
Yeah, you'd need to have a clean area.
Yeah, that is one thing. Prairies usually, for the first 3 years, are the weediest spots on earth. So you need to... If you're going to put in a prairie, realize that it's going to take you a lot of work to get it, started.
Up and running properly.
But they are so wonderful when you do get them in. Yeah. And I assume your mix has some prairie forbs as well, which are the non-grassy flowering plants like prairie dock and compass plant and rattlesnake master and so on, because you don't want just grasses.
No.
Prairies work much better when you have what nature intended.
Yep.
So
there we go. Thanks, Mary, and good luck with that. There's a lot of good information online about
Excellent information out there. Yeah.
I know even Prairie Nursery, for example, has a lot of great educational information.
Neil has been on your show, I'm
many
sure.
Many a time,
And AgriCall is another good source for information for prairies. And Frank Hassler's Good Oak Ecological also has some great, and there are many other businesses, too.
Yep, there sure are. Patty in Stone Lake. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for all the good info. My question is about my dahlias. I've had the same tubers for probably, maybe 8 or 10 years, and I dig them up and dry them and wrap them, store them, and every year they get taller and taller. And then if I don't stake them, then they're flopping over. I'm wondering if I'm not planting them deep enough or...
Hmm. That's a really good question, and I'm sorry to say I don't know for sure why they would be... doing that. Are you putting them in the same area? Are you fertilizing them differently?
Well, I have several flower gardens and along the house, and I plant them, intermixed with hollyhocks and everything else. So they're, and then this year I tried a couple on the north side. I thought maybe it's too much sun, and they didn't get very tall, but they also didn't blossom.
Yeah, right.
But I have... The one in the corner here is, it's above the roof line.
Good heavens.
Yeah, and the stalk is probably 2 inches across.
Wow.
And when I dig them out...
It's a monster.
They are.
My goodness.
But then when I dig them out, I will have planted, I divide them.
Uh-huh.
But then when I dig them out, I have this, a 5-pound bag of potatoes.
Yeah. Those are pretty big tubers, aren't they?
Huge.
Boy, it sounds like you've got kind of a wonderful thing.
Ideal condition for growing, that's for sure.
Yeah, and you must do an excellent job of growing those. I assume these are the dinner plate size types?
No. No, I do have some of those, and so far those are not growing to the roof line. These are just the smaller, they're all purple, the ball type.
Hmm. Well, I'd keep staking them, I guess, is the best thing that I can advise. And
I could put them in a row and just put a fence up.
Yeah. I also would say that if you've been fertilizing them a lot, pull back on that, and maybe that'll help. If they have a little less fertility, maybe they'll be a little less vigorous.
Yeah.
Okay.
And send a photo next.
Yeah.
I would love to see.
I will.
I mean, really, hopefully, I hope you will, Patty, because
that would be cool.
Great to see.
I will, just with my phone, and send it to your website?
Perfect. Send it to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show.
Okay, I will do that today.
All right, thanks, Patty. Appreciate it very much. Oh, I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Very cool. I wanted to mention the Horticulture Society at the University of Wisconsin-Madison's holding its annual fall plant sale, and it runs today, Saturday and Sunday, I think from 9 to 6 each day, 9 to 7 on Friday, 9 to 6 on Saturday, and 9 to 4 on Sunday. It's at the UW-Madison Stock Pavilion. That's on Linden Drive in Madison. That's right next to the Babcock Hall Dairy Store. And, you know, there's plants of all kinds to brighten up a room or maybe a dorm room or an apartment or a landscape and outdoor living space. There's a large variety of indoor and outdoor plants, tropicals, cacti, orchids, mums, asters, orchids, small trees, succulents, bromeliads. So they're even, this year they have some keychain plants and some small succulent gardens and fairy gardens and terrariums they've added. Yeah. So the event is, again, it's going on, fall plant sale going on right now at the UW-Madison Stock Pavilion today, tomorrow, and Sunday. And tell you what, there's some good plants there, and the price is right. And you were involved in that way
back
when.
Many, many years ago. I remember unloading those big trucks, and it's pretty cool.
Bruce in Fitchburg. Hi, thanks for calling.
Yes, how are you today?
Good. Appreciate the call.
In my yard, I generally use a Madison grass mix, and I think in the backyard, I've developed a small spot where it's, I think it's a bent grass, maybe off the golf course, but it's a very thick, matty type grass, and in the fall when I rake it up, it'll come up. I'm trying to figure out how to control that, get rid of it, and get back to my normal yard.
You think it's bent grass? Is it bent grass?
It probably is. I do see that fairly often where it kind of has one root and then just sort of spreads over the top of the soil. And so when you rake it, it comes up.
That's exactly what it does. Yeah.
It's, it can be a problem. Is this in a shadier area by chance or a wetter area?
It's fairly open. It's right off my deck area.
Okay. It can be a little difficult because, you know, you can't, if you use a grass killer on it, then, you know, you kill the rest of your grass too. So you usually have to spot treat it and just reseed or sod. You might actually get better results by using sod. If there are any seeds from it in the grass, it may not, or your existing turf, it may not be able to compete with that very well.
Yeah, especially if it's not a huge amount. I like sod anyway, just because you can put it down whenever.
Yeah, and it looks great right away.
Yeah, it looks great right away.
Well, that would be preferable, because I have tried to control it, and it just seems to come back, and it's very aggressive.
Yes, it can be, and I, again, competing with just seeded turf may not be the best answer. So I would wait until spring, and in the areas, you know, I'd take it out this fall if you can, rake it up, etc., and try sodding over it next spring.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. And Lisa, boy, thank you. Boy, did we cover the topics.
Yeah, we did.
A lot of great topics, and you're going to come back and be with us again, I assume.
I certainly would like that. That would be great.
I hope so. She will be back. Great time with Lisa Johnson today, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, specializing in hort education for home gardeners and working with the Master Gardener Program. She'll be back, and we'll do it again. We will turn to our attention to Monday. We're going to learn about wild rice harvesting from a wildlife biologist with the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission at 11. 11:45, my good friend Patty Lowe stops by to talk about her new edition of her book, Indian Nations of Wisconsin, Histories of Endurance and Renewal. That's Monday. Thanks for listening. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.